This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Do you have a Twitter account? Do you have an iPhone? Do you have an Instagram account? If so, you can be an online food critic. Some people blanch at this thought, others embrace it. I'm talking to two people today who are both online influencers in their very own right. Stay with me. Some people may think the internet is for porn. Others think it's for influence. Hello, I'm Pete Dillon. It's 7 minutes past one. You're on your favourite food and wine show in Melbourne, bar none. Cravings here with me, taking you through until 2 o'clock. Before you go on a little journey with the escape pod, I need to say a few thank yous. Thank you to Alex, who sits on my front desk, and Karen. Thank you to Jake for the news. And I need to say a premature thank you to my two guests in the studio. One of them is known as Miss Trixie Drinks Tea. She makes cakes. She makes beautiful cakes. It all started as a hobby, and now she's almost an entrepreneur. She'll be making truckloads of money out of this, or maybe she won't. She's going to tell us all about that. But first, I should say welcome.
Thank you, Paige.
Should we just call you Miss Trixie, or are you happy for me to call you Alice today?
Miss Trixie. That appears to be the name of choice these days.
So excellent.
Absolutely.
Miss Trix it is. And Joanne, am I calling you second helping, or am I calling you Joanne?
I think Joanne.
Joanne today? Excellent. You are known on the interwebs as my second helping. You're a food stylist, a food critic. Tell the audience what you do.
I play with food. I take pictures of it. I make it. I write about it. I share it with people, and I make it look pretty.
And come up with recipes as well?
I do.
So when we think about the world of online influence in food, are you two considered important?
Oh, well, someone might think that we're a little bit important. I think I'm still grasping at the whole thing that someone actually thinks that I have an opinion or validates my opinion. It's quite nice.
It is, but it is a strange concept to be called an influencer in a sphere that it's just something that, for me, I'm passionate about, and that's why I do it. And if people want to listen to me talk about my passion, then I think that's awesome.
How much of it is generated by yourself and how much of it is generated by others as far as your influence? So, Joe, I'll start with you. Do you get invited to a lot of stuff? Do people send you stuff? And if so, why do you think that happens?
Yes, I do get invited to a lot of things, and the delivery man does know both my work address and my home address, and both neighbours and work colleagues always peer very eagerly to see what goodies have arrived and whether or not they can eat them. Why do I think this happened? I think what happens is that brands out there decide that a way of connecting with an audience is by people who are already talking about that subject or already in the audience that they want to connect with. And I think for some brands, I've been identified as someone who might be in that spot, and then that's why they reach out to me.
It's a very, very fine answer. I have to confess, because of this particular program, I also get people send me stuff. I have an online site that is about food and wine. I get sent stuff as well. Alice, do people send you stuff?
I do, yeah. I actually received a delivery yesterday from Buller, which was awesome. So people send me things that they want me to feature on Instagram. And it's nice. They obviously believe that, you know, when I post about something, you know, that I believe in that product or the brand. So, yeah, people send me things all the time. And then I mean, I don't get invited to as many things, I suppose, because I suppose my business is about cakes, but occasionally like dessert events or that sort of thing, people will chuck me on their event list.
How do you make the decision what to attend or what to go to? So when you get invites to events, how do you sit down and what's the rationale for going or for saying thank you but I have to politely decline or, you know, make up an excuse, I'm already booked?
It's easy for me. The premise for my whole online presence is second helping. So I want to talk to people about things that I want more of. So if it's an event or a product or something that I would seek out myself and want more of, then I would go.
How do you politely decline?
I mean, if I was politely declining, I would just say it doesn't align with my brand. I think, like, my brand is particularly clear. It's sweets, it's sugar.
I was going to say, you do desserts and cakes. So if somebody's all of a sudden cakes, sending like, you Equal Next or something.
Exactly. I'm not going to go to an event about meat. Do you know what I mean? I love meat. I love it and I eat it, but...
See, that's the event that I will go to.
Yeah. And believe me, I would love to go and be invited, but for that brand, they're not going to gain anything from me. Yeah. So, and I'm not going to feature a steak on my Instagram. Invite me to a cake event or a dessert event, I'm there with bells on.
Or even cheese. I mentioned cheese.
Even cheese, yeah. Because cheese is the end, like, you know, meal for quite a few people after dinner. So it makes sense.
Jo?
Similar. It's a polite decline. And I explain that it doesn't fit in either with my brand or my audience.
How do you, and I'm going to spend some more time on this after our first break, but something to think about, a bit of a question I'll notice. How do you determine who your audience is? Are you able to look at your Instagram following or those people who read your blog and have a look at your stats on your blog and say, well, I've got a big audience from this particular geographical area, or have a bit of a think about where your audience comes from and who they might be, because it's, for me, it's quite fascinating. I look at our web stats and so much of my audience is now coming from Singapore, China, Indonesia, and the United States. And oddly enough, I think the word for our online magazine is very closely associated with a word in Ukrainian that might sound like shkufa, because the amount of traffic we get from Ukraine is extraordinary.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. It's 1:15. I have two online influencers with me in the studio, and I've just got a message from another online influencer. His name is Sean, telling me he's listening. Good afternoon, Sean. We are talking online influence in hospitality. There was a very interesting story around this week that talked about wannabe foodies versus food critics. And this is perennial, ongoing, sometimes pain in the ass discussion.
Don't mention the war.
Where people will say, oh, well, because you have an Instagram account and an opinion, it doesn't make you a food critic. So there is one school of thought that suggests that anybody is a food critic simply by virtue of the fact that you do have an opinion and people are interested in your opinion. Then there's another school of thought of all those hardcore people who've studied journalism and spent years trying to perfect a craft. And I think we saw a really good example of this. A couple of winners from a reality TV program ended up as food editors for the Western Australian, and it ended spectacularly bad in a very short time, which was hardly a surprise because writing and journalism is not that easy. So, Joe, I am going to mention the war, and I'm going to throw it to you first. Where do you sit in this discussion about who should be an influencer or who should be called a critic? Or, you know, does it all just blur together and everybody is either paid or not paid to have an opinion?
I think that the first danger is assigning everyone a label and saying that because of this little set of criteria, you fit into the journalist box and a critic. Because of another set of criteria, you fit into another one, which is an influencer. Or I think the lines can be blurred.
Oh, in my case, they're very blurred.
I think that in some cases it blurs successfully, and in others it doesn't. I completely agree that journalists spend a very long time honing their craft, but I also think that journalists aren't the only one to be able to construct a sentence that's worth reading and has entertainment.
Correct.
However, not everyone who does self-publish has those skills. That's where the problem lies. There are some people who are really good communicators in both the written or visual form, and they're the ones I think that have longevity as online influencers, because at the end we get bombarded with so much content, we'll end up gravitating towards the stuff that is actually good quality.
Alison, are you inclined to agree?
Yeah, more or less. I just think it's, you know, it's good to note that people, they're turning to different sources for opinions about food. So I don't think you can deny that influencers, you know, they have that title for a reason. So people are turning to their channels to see what they're wanting to say. So they're considered a trusted, you know, source to read. But I still read, you know, traditional columns to see what next restaurant I'm going to. I'm not going to deny the fact that there are food critics and journalists out there who not, they know what they're talking about, you know?
I sit in this really murky pond on this because I am first and foremost a chef by trade. I'm also qualified as a journalist, and I'm also qualified in marketing and PR. So I sort of have this very murky pond that I work in, that sometimes the board is crossed, because I can talk about the industry from an industry perspective because I worked in it for 20 years. And I know, Joe, you worked in and around the industry as well for a long time. So there is that sense of whilst we may not all have exactly the same qualifications, there is no question that the influence is important, and it's quite murky. I'd like to know what you think. 0427 joy 949. Jump into the discussion. You can send an SMS 0427 joy 949. You can email onair@joy.org.au, or you can send a tweet to cravings joy 949. Tell us where you get your information about food, and whether blogs and Instagram and online accounts are the way forward. And, you know, the talk yesterday that we may only see printed newspapers or a particular printed newspaper on the weekend, and Monday to Friday that output will be via online. So if you're online now, do you sort of have a step ahead of the game, I wonder?
Potentially. I mean, I still love reading the paper. Like, I'm still a girl who still reads it, but yeah, I mean, you can't deny that that's where the industry is moving. So, I mean, I certainly feel like I'm in a really nice driving seat.
So are you the same, because you've had such a strong online presence to date?
I think if you're familiar with the online world now, then that is going to give you an advantage, because you're going to know how it works and how to make the most of it and how to market yourself within it and all the little, you know, nooks and crannies of that strange little online space. But doesn't mean that other people can't.
How do you start? And I guess that's the way that some people would be, or the thing that some people would be interested in. You know, they spend a lot of money eating out anyway. How do they start? Is there a very easy way? Do you set up all your social handles first and then create a blog, or do you create a blog and then try and find social handles to match it? Or does one need the other? Do you have to have a blog? Can you just be Instagram? How's it all happen?
Well, I started mine as a blog. I just wanted to share what I was doing and what I was making and where I was going.
And yours started as a hobby, making cakes.
Correct. Mm. So, yeah, and then I just decided, like, I may as well sort of share this with people who have similar interests and are like-minded to me. So I put up my blog first, and then everything else sort of followed. But I didn't really understand Instagram when it first started. Friends were telling me to get on board with it, and then I finally did. And now it's kind of, I don't really, like, I've got my blog element, but Instagram for me is my main platform that I operate on. I don't use Twitter really much anymore, but I certainly did start because I felt the need to have it. But now I've discovered that my followers predominantly follow me on Instagram, and I channel my efforts there.
You're speaking to a man who, when Twitter was first put in front of me, I said, oh, this is not going to last. now I live my life on
and
Twitter.
And you love it.
Yeah, I do.
You love it.
Joe, what's your advice for somebody who's interested in taking the, and it could be that they make curry, or it could be that, like Alice, they specialise in cakes.
I think it depends on two things. One, where you think the people you want to talk to are and what you feel comfortable with. If you're more comfortable holding your phone or a camera, then go for a visual thing like Instagram or Pinterest, or even start up a branded Snapchat. Or if you prefer the written word and you think that you can get your story across better that way, then a blog or Twitter or something that's more word-focused would be the way to go.
Can you have a blog that's predominantly visual? So
yeah, absolutely.
Sort of,
yeah.
I know I've seen some that are almost all photographs.
The evolution of mine from when I started back in 2007 to what it looks like now. Back then, there would be one image and a lot of copy.
Yep.
And now the ratio has almost reversed. Not quite, but it's probably half-half now.
Mm. Is that, and how do you determine whether your audience likes that? I mean, obviously you get feedback via your blog or via your socials?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can tell what media people respond to and interact with by the likes. So I look at my web traffic, much like you said you did, and I look at my Instagram stats, and you see what people engage the most with. And obviously that's the stuff they want more of, so that's what I try and give them more of.
Mm. Is there much time? And again, another question on notice. I'm going to come back to this after we have a little break. Is there much time or consideration given to who are your competitors and how you elevate yourself above your competitors? And the other thing I want you to think about that we're going to also talk about is, can you make money from doing this? Whether it's via advertising or other means. Joe, you and I know somebody who has publicly stated that they do this because it saves them having to buy groceries and cooking, which is, it bothers me greatly. And then we'll get on to some of the controversial stuff a bit later that's happened in the past.
G'day, I'm Pete Evans, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Thank you, Paleo Pete. It's 29 minutes past one. You're here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. You're all very quiet there at home. You must be on your, you know, on your scooter driving to IKEA or something and listening in the car. 0427JOY949 is the text number. Somebody can text me and let me know they're awake. On air at joy.org.au via email or tweet to CravingsJOY949. I have in the studio Miss Trixie Drinks Tea and my second helping. No, second helping. Sorry. For somebody I work with, you would think that I probably should have that right. You can call them Alice and Joe if you want to. We are talking about online influence, and I sort of did give you a question on notice. Can you make money from being an online influencer? And I don't mean, you know, the invitations to events and not having to cook and buy groceries. That's a benefit. But can you physically make money from advertising on your site or using your influence to find some sort of pecuniary return, Joe?
Yes, you can.
How?
Advertising on websites is probably the starting point and a very obvious one.
And is that all that click stuff that you just shows up in a column and people
yeah, absolutely.
Get annoyed by?
The other things you can do on website that make money is affiliate buying. So if you have online stores that are on your website and people buy stuff through that, through your site, then you can get a percentage of it.
Right. You're not going to retire on this sort of thing,
I'm
are you?
Not moving to the Bahamas anytime soon. But what it does for me is it helps pay for the cost of hosting the website, a cost of the little bit of my time of writing the content, because I've got a full-time job outside my blog and my
which,
online
which, oddly enough,
stuff.
Is in social and online.
It is. But keeping it going and keeping up with content and all that sort of stuff takes quite a lot of bit of time.
Absolutely. It takes
and
up
so
a great deal of time.
Basically the money that I make out of this pays to keep the whole thing running and a little tiny bit of my time.
Yeah. Alice, do you do advertising on your site?
I don't know, but
you've been accused of it though, haven't you?
I have. Well, yeah, like we were just saying before that people often accuse you of possibly being paid for something if you're featuring it a lot. So, you know, I'm a massive fan of Darren Purchase's work.
Regular
I love,
guest on this program.
Yeah,
brilliant guy.
He's a great guy, and he makes, in my view, unpaid view, the best salted caramel in Melbourne, right?
Yes, so, he does. Yeah, he bought it this afternoon.
It's amazing.
There's not a lot of
like,
questions
with a spoon,
about that.
You're eating it from the jar. So that's my opinion. That is not a paid opinion. That's what I believe. But often people will accuse you of being paid by brands or by, you know, people like Darren because you simply love a
product.
Suddenly
because you like something and talk about it or showcase it a lot, there's an ulterior motive and you're being
paid.
Doesn't
mean you're on the payroll, does it?
No, that's right.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I mean, it can be quite frustrating when people do think that, you know. I'm not being paid by him. I just think it's a great product. So, yeah, so I don't make money in that way at all.
Let me put a proposition to you. Let's say that I manage the public relations for Buller.
Yes.
And I come to you and say, Alice, there's a nice alignment between what you do and what we do. We would like to pay you $750 for two posts that feature our products and that are about our products, but they're endorsed by you for your audience.
Mm-hmm. Look, I would certainly consider it. Like, it's, you know, I'm not going to lie about that. It, you know, it would be a consideration. If Buller aligns well with the Miss Trixie brand, then I would certainly consider taking it on. And obviously, I'm using that product above others that I might consider to use. So obviously, that payment is obviously some form of, you know, consideration. So for me, I suppose in the space that I am, which I don't obviously blog as much or write as much, it's definitely something to consider for sure.
Joe, I'm Rock Bear Winery. I want to give you $500 for two posts where you feature our wine and you review our wine. Would you say yes?
In that case, yes, I would. Mm. It's a wine that I would drink and like anyway, and I would be happy to do it, and I would disclose that I was doing it.
Have you got a lot of wine? Do you review much wine on your site?
On and off. It's not. There is a section dedicated to imbibable things, and wine does tend to feature there, but I don't do a lot of wine, so it's not something that I would...
It's not your core business.
Not my core business.
Mm. There has been comments in the past, and we won't mention names because that's not a very savoury thing to do, of people who have chosen to approach a restaurant or a venue and say, I would like to offer you a favourable review on my blog in return for you giving me a free meal with drinks. Is that unethical, either of you?
I don't know whether unethical is the right word. It's unsavoury, and it's definitely not something that I would do. And I think the people who do go down that path are the ones who tar and muddy the waters for people like Miss Trixie and I, who would never do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because we get painted with the same brush and people expect that everyone does it.
And it damages your integrity. You know, like, I'm representing my brand as Miss Trixie, and if that was to ever come out or, you know, that was to be found, I just think the damage that could be done is awful. Like, that.
Well, I guess you're going into Darren Purchase and say, look, I've done all these mentions of you on my blog. I'm happy to keep mentioning you, but I want a bag of tricks for it.
Exactly. And, I mean, it's obviously very tricky and stuff, but I would never proactively approach someone and be like, I'll give you a favourable review if you pay me money. I just don't think that makes any sense.
But. And I think anyone who comes at the world of online influence from that angle is coming about it the wrong way. You need to become an expert in something and gain people's trust and have the integrity that was just mentioned in order for those people to go, oh, you're someone who I want to align with my brand, not the other way around. Mm.
So I'm going to put the shoe on the other foot. So I work in an industry where we do rely on influencers to be a part of something because we want our product or our brand in front of their 100,000 Instagram followers, because we've seen in the past where a particular brand has had an influencer tweet or Instagram about their product. It may be a cone of gelato, for example, and within several hours there is a queue outside the gelato store because somebody who has 80 or 100,000 Instagram followers has popped up a post. How big does your following have to be to make that sort of thing happen?
I don't think it necessarily has to be how big the following is. It's how appropriate it is. So if you're talking to people who really like a sweet, you know, thing,
Alice,
like Alice's audience, then you're not going to pitch them
barbecue festival.
No. Mm. So it's being appropriate. And I think smaller audiences sometimes can be a better approach because you get more engagement and more reach. So numbers aren't everything. It's just talking to the right people.
Alice, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think, you know, the number of followers you've got is certainly something, and you can't deny that, but the level of engagement is huge as well. So people, brands are also looking at, you know, are people commenting? Are they reacting? Like, what's actually happening? Are people sharing those posts? A like is a like, but is that actual action from someone to then go to that gelato shop and buy?
Yeah. And it's whether or not the look and feel of the influencer that you're reaching out to is in line with the brand as well. Because if they have really slapdash thrown together looking stuff and you're a very minimalist, stylist looking product, then it doesn't feel on brand and it's going to feel like you're trying too hard or you've missed the boat.
Yeah. And people can pick it. They can smell it from a mile away if it's not fitting with the
brand.
If
it's not a right fit, yeah.
My guests are Miss Trixie Drinks Tea and Second Helping. You can find them both online, on Instagram, I think both on Twitter. Certainly, if you go to your favourite search engine, you will find Miss Trixie Drinks Tea and look at beautiful cakes. And you can look at Second Helping and look at beautiful food styling and photography, because I think that's sort of the stock in trade for both of you, is how beautiful your presentation is of your product. Is that fair, Jane?
People eat with their eyes first.
They do.
Well, they do, and their hands.
And a picture says a thousand words.
Yes.
I'm really, really, really picky about the images I put up on Instagram. And I was doing a bit of a flick through this morning whilst I was in bed, like, should I put a post up? No. And there were images I was like, I just would not put them up. I'm happy to let the cake go, like, even though I've spent hours on the cake, I'm happy to let it go if it's not right, because it makes me feel ill. I can't do it. I know it sounds ridiculous. So I will sit there and edit my photos. Yes.
Absolutely.
I'm editing photos. There'll be photos that I don't put up if I don't.
Tell people have been editing your photos for years. I don't know if you ever saw a Playboy centerfold, but my word, those were edited. And, you know, the covers of magazines are always edited. So
yes.
I wouldn't be worried about editing an image of a cake, because I think there's almost an expectation that maybe they have been edited. Joe, you're looking at me weirdly.
Was that a weird look?
Well, I just wonder, is there an expectation that when you go to someone's Instagram account or go to someone's Pinterest account or blog, that the images may be edited for best effect?
I think there is. I mean, I'm sure there's a Instagram for Dummies book out there somewhere, and everyone who talks to you about optimizing photos for Instagram tells you the absolute gazillion editing apps that you can download for your phone and tells you how to do it. And
don't you just edit in Instagram?
I don't.
Mm-mm. Neither of you do?
No.
Oh, I'm doing something wrong.
I think you have more control if you do it outside of the app. So I take all my photography outside of the app, edit it, and then upload it to Instagram.
Likewise.
So how much time do you spend a week on your respective blogs?
That's a great question.
Well, I would, like, on Instagram, I'm trying to post probably every 2 days. So obviously there's time that obviously goes in behind the scenes to make the cake and edit the photos. There's a good amount of my day. I obviously have a full-time job as well. So Monday to Friday, I'm, you know, consumed by work. But then after, you know, 5 p.m., I'm either in the kitchen baking or looking for recipes. Like, everything else, all my other time is
spent on that in some way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my spare time spent pouring wine down my neck.
Isn't that research?
I sort of wish that was the case. I need to be, like, making cakes whilst with wine in hand.
I am reviewing wine, so that's fair.
That's nice.
I can claim that as a billable hour by consuming wine.
Mm. Yeah, so a lot of time is poured into
Alice, you're making cakes for people outside of your work hours as well, where somebody will want a wedding cake or a birthday cake or a christening cake or something.
Yeah.
Does it pay for itself in that respect?
Yeah, it is now. I've just recently
it's a vulgar question.
No. Like, I've just recently sort of become a little bit stricter with how I sort of charge people. I suppose I've gotten mistreats to the point that people do want one of my cakes, which is really flattering, but it does take time and it does take physical labour and ingredients. So I just charge appropriately for that now. And that's as simple as that. I'm sort of at a point now, if people can't unfortunately afford it or they don't want to pay that premium,
then they can
that's
go to the
fine.
Cheesecake
but,
shop.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even buy chocolate from the supermarket. You know, I just don't think the quality is there. So do you know what I mean? So I charge appropriately. I only want the best chocolate.
I think one of the most difficult things when you take it from a hobby into a business is feeling comfortable putting a value on all of your work and not just the cost of ingredients or anything like that, but the cost of time and the cost of your expertise that goes into it.
Yeah. And like, I don't deny I'm not professionally trained. I'm not a chef, but
that doesn't mean you can't make amazing cakes.
One of your heroes is not trained as a chef.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is like, I feel like now I'm at a point where I know what I'm talking about when it comes to cakes. You know, I often have clients who are like, I want like a massive, massive 6-tier wedding cake. And that's great. But I'm like, oh, A, I don't feel comfortable making that. And B, like, my cakes are real, so they will collapse. Like, you know, they've actually got real stuff in them. They haven't got gums or whatever that's holding your cake together.
To make it look good for the photo.
Exactly. So,
Joe, do you charge people for your time to consult or advise on brands or business?
I have, yes. Not always, but I have. It depends on who it is and what the situation is. Ongoing things, I will. Sometimes if it's a little one-off, I won't.
Got to be some value in it somewhere.
I've missed my favourite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9 fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
Both of these young ladies use their hands to do their work outside of their real work, perhaps. I wasn't being vulgar, but now you've gone there.
I know.
My guests are, we'll call her Joanne, the second helping, Alice, Miss Trixie Drinks Tea. We are talking about the life of online influence, I suppose. The last probably 5 years we've seen a huge uptake in people having a blog or using their Twitter or Instagram accounts to start influencing to the point where it's become a little bit contentious and controversial, and there are people who are being quite unscrupulous in a number of ways. What's the biggest challenge for the two of you in being considered online influencers? Is there a sense of I have a bit of responsibility, or is it simply, well, this is my opinion, and if people don't like it, opinions are like bumholes, everyone's got one, go and find one that you like.
I think once you do have acknowledged influence and brands are coming to you to help them tell their story, there is a bit of responsibility. And personally, integrity is really important to me. And I don't want to say anything that's not true to what I believe as an individual or that's going to be offensive to anyone.
Have you had a situation where you've used the wrong account?
No, I haven't had too many situations where I've used the wrong account. It's been recently, like on Snapchat. That's been about it. But apart from that, it's just been.
Is that, it's been our other guest is not carving it, is she?
She needs
to go and get
some
water. Go right down the back, Dale. There's a little kitchen there. You'll find some water. Alice, it's down to you and I. so it's sort of one of those things, I guess, where I have used the wrong account for posting on somebody's behalf before, which was a little bit interesting. But I suppose there is a great sense of responsibility. And I have an account for this program, which is on Twitter. I run several Instagram accounts that are varying things. I have, I think, 4 or 5 Twitter accounts that I run, a personal one, which allows me to vent my political my political leanings. But certainly from this account, I would never do that. Or from our magazine's account, I'm mindful of what I post. So there is a bit of responsibility, isn't there?
Definitely. And I think there's, like, for Miss Trixie, there's definitely an expectation around a language that, she uses. I speak about her in third person in the sense that she's another, you know,
identity.
Yeah, exactly. Another personality. She talks in a different way. Like recently I made some cupcakes and I nearly called them crack cakes. And then I was like, actually,
Miss Trixie wouldn't say that.
She's way too sweet. So I think there's that expectation around like the language I use with her. And then, you know, obviously in my personal life, it's completely different. So it is, you've got to be really mindful around the accounts that you're using and making sure that you are logging out of them and switching and using the right ones. Cause it can be not fatal, but
It can be damaging to your brand.
It can be very damaging to the brand.
How difficult is it to talk about sort of your alter ego or yourself in a third-person environment? It's something I can't do.
I'm pretty easy about it now, I suppose, because Miss Trixie is so heavily ingrained in my life. It's pretty easy to be like, you know, this is Miss Trixie, this is what she does, and, you know, this is what I do on the weekend. So it's pretty easy now, but I think first starting off it was a little bit bizarre.
Do members of your family occasionally slip and just call you Trixie instead of Alice?
Absolutely. And Trixie used to be my grandmother's name, so people do enjoy calling me Trixie. Yeah, and many people just call me Miss Trixie now, which is lovely.
Really?
Yeah, it's good. It's good fun.
So if people want to know a bit more about Miss Trixie, they can go to your website?
They can go to the website or my Instagram account, which is probably my preferred platform.
And it's Miss Trixie Drinks Tea.
It is.
And it's all about cakes.
It is all about cakes.
Who taught you to bake?
Look, I sort of taught myself, but I've definitely got to give credit to Mum. She, you know, she was trained in the hospitality industry, so she is traditionally trained. She can do many things that I can't.
Right.
Yeah, and so she certainly trained me, but a lot of it came just from watching other influencers on YouTube and that. So, yeah, I've sort of taught myself quite a bit.
Joe, who influenced your food career? Did that come from somebody, or is it sort of just a natural evolution of?
I think it's just evolved on its own.
Mm.
I've always been surrounded by people who've loved food, and I think it just kind of grew from that.
Because you worked in coffee for a while, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Sorry, you're getting a bit husky over there. We'll say goodbye to Joe, because she's about to expire out there, which is not a good thing. She's got the fit of the cough. So, and we might say goodbye to you, Miss Trixie, as well.
Alrighty.
Thank you for coming in and sharing your journey again. People, the name of your website is Miss Trixie Drinks Tea.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a Google search, or sorry, a favorite search engine search of Miss Trixie Drinks Tea. You can also find Second Helping on the interwebs as well, both blog and I certainly know Instagram and Twitter. And of course, you can interact with this program on Twitter. You'll find us at CravingsJoy949. You can look at Scoffer Magazine on any of your search engines and find some of the stuff we do online as well. New to Joy podcast this week, Checkpoint, your source for video games, news and reviews. Interview John Clark, president of the Miles Society of Australia. Jason Singh joins James, Jess and Christina live in the studio on Triple Threat. Joy Eurovision brings you Eurovision 2016 semi 2 first half preview. Of course, Eurovision on next weekend. Stand Up Straight interview Max Neagle from Living Positive Victoria to preview this year's Candlelight Memorial. Plus, Colin explores the music of Rodgers and Hammerstein on Behind the Curtain, another podcast feed new to Joy. You can also go to joy.org.au/cravings, download this podcast. It's up every Monday night. So in case you miss a show or two, you can go back and listen to all the shows we've done in the past. Joy podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au/podcasts.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD TIQ Community Radio Station Joy 94.9.
It is time for me to get out of here. The Skate Pod are in after 2 p.m. and I can see one of our favourite Cravings guests out there, Sebastian Rayburn, who's making cocktails. So I'm going to get out of here and go out and slurp a bit of a cocktail down my neck. Second Helping, Joanne, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
I hope you make it through the rest of the afternoon, my dear. It's not looking good so far, and I don't mean to make light of your poor health, but thank you for joining us. Alice, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Pete.
I'll be back this time next week. I've been Pete Dillon. This is Cravings. A pleasure to have your company, and have a very good afternoon.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.